The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
We have a great episode of UFC Unfiltered. Myself and Matt Sarah, of course, are here. Master Henzo Gracie is in studio. Master Hickson Gracie calls in. Amanda Nunes calls in. Everything goes smoothly for once.
Great show.
It really was.
Jaws are dropped throughout this arena. Nobody is sitting down.
Chasing that finish. Elbows raining down.
Oh! On the button!
Are you kidding me?
Oh, he hurt him again!
He's out!
This is UFC Unfiltered. And now, your hosts, Jim Norton and Matt Serra.
Okay.
Hi.
I'm gone for 1 week and they changed the opening. That's different. That guy's voiceover.
Yeah.
They took out digital media?
Yeah, it's a different company. We changed names.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Wait, I wasn't paying attention.
That's all right. You're busy.
Wait,
getting
wait.
Ready.
Did we hear the Joe Rogan yelling and everything else?
Yeah, that's all the same. But okay. it's a different company.
The guy's opening.
You are alert.
I just noticed these things.
I think Master Hens was on Twitter or something.
That's okay. Whatever he's doing is fine.
What to announce?
I'm not going to tell him not to do something. We should turn the air on. It's brutal in here.
Yeah, it
is. Of course, we have Henzo Gracie is our in-studio guy. I'm really happy you're here because
Master Henzo.
I've never got to be in here when you're here.
It's the first time. It's true. First time.
Yes, I'm happy.
And it's a pleasure to meet you. I thought he was big.
You thought he was fat.
Yeah.
You're trying to be nice.
The guy's in better shape than we are.
You can move this thing. You can move this thing around. I want you comfortable. Put that right there.
Yeah, that's the first thing he said to me. He goes, oh, I thought you were fat. I'm like, oh, no, thank you. Yeah.
Unbelievable. I probably saw some old pictures. I never realized he was...
Oh, I was a pig. Yeah. I was a fat pig. Yeah, I was really awful.
You were happy and you didn't know it.
Yeah. I was really bad for a while.
Yeah. And now look at him.
Yeah, just a little bit better.
Just coming from the gym. Just came from the gym.
I know, he's wearing
sweatpants. Eating nuts.
I don't like that. He came in wearing sweatpants. And that
nuts mess me up, though. It's like I've been constipated. Not that anybody cares, but I've been constipated for a week. I think I eat too many almonds.
Yeah?
I think that does it, yeah.
That helps.
I don't know, it blocked me up.
He's making fun of your sweatpants.
I know, but I literally just came from the gym
to
here. Club? No, I know.
Ask him about his jeans shorts in Brazil.
Oh yeah, you know, when I went to Brazil the first time, I wasn't with it with the wardrobe. I didn't know you're not supposed to wear jean shorts.
What's wrong with jean shorts?
Oh, what?
That's terrific.
Go ask some of those Brazilians when they're cackling.
It'll be the
at
same
you.
As wearing the Speedo here on the beach.
It is, right?
Yeah, it is.
They made fun of you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I should have asked Shoney Carter to borrow some of his Speedos.
Yeah, Speedos, they only look right on certain people. By the way, there's a big controversy about Conor. Everybody is saying that he had an erection on stage. Am I the only one that doesn't see that?
Hey, can't the guy be excited to be in the
big show?
I don't
think he did.
No, I don't think he did.
Everyone is saying that. Google Conor McGregor hard on. It's like everyone is saying that he had a hard on while he was arguing with his face to face with Floyd. I'm like, no, he didn't.
I'm sure he didn't. I'm sure he just, you know, was happy to be there.
Yeah, all right. Maybe he's just getting his energy. Because I admire the guy. If that's how his body works when he's ready to fight, he gets an erection. I kind of admire that.
You know what's great about today?
What?
Not only do we have Master Henzo in studio, this is like a Gracie filled episode. We have legendary Hickson Gracie calling in.
Yep.
That's wild.
That'll be unbelievable.
Be right?
Great. It's been a while since I spoke to him, so it'll be a pleasure to have a chance to talk to him.
Do you guys only see each other like at seminars and things like that?
We used to see each other every day when we were living back in Brazil, 25 years ago. Now we live across, he lives in California, I live here, so it's very rare the chance to see him.
Is it fair to say that he is the best Gracie ever? I mean, is he that?
Many people ask me that question constantly, but the reality is it's different times.
Yes.
Hollis was unbelievable. Carson was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Uncle Helio, my grandfather. So it's different generations.
Yeah.
It would be the same as comparing the beauty of women. It's not polite. You know, it's different times. I remember before, like now we go to the academy here in New York, we have 1,500 students to train. If you arrive there at 7 o'clock in the morning, you can train until 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
We have partners. Back in Brazil, I remember the time that we have only 10 people to train with.
Yeah.
You know, and I would be the whole day in the academy waiting for someone to walk in so I could roll with them.
Right.
So it's like it's different times, different. Everything was different from now. Like now we can make an unbelievable black belt in 4.5 years.
Yeah.
Look at these kids, Gordon and
and
Gary and his son, Ryan, his brother, Ryan. So in reality, we are able to make people good. What before would took us 10, 11, 12, 13 years.
That's a good example, by the way, about the women. Because like you look back at women like in the 15th century, all the paintings, they're all fat.
Marilyn Monroe would be considered ugly today, out of shape today.
Yeah. They look like I used to.
Yes. Says you. Says you. Hey, let me tell you. Did you ever hear Beauty's in the Eye of the, you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Marilyn Monroe.
She was lovely. Yeah.
Oh, I like that. I mean, you want a little thick.
And but it's because you're a little bit older. I see the same way. But
Hansel,
the young
time,
kids
Hansel.
Would think, oh, she's out of shape. She was not in the today's pattern.
Yeah, Jane Mansfield. They all had big hips.
Yes.
Call me old fashioned, but I like a little junk in the trunk.
I do too. Yeah, I do too.
My wife may be hearing the.
Oh, yeah? Well, she, I mean, you know, I want my wife.
No, what I'm saying, my wife may be here. I can't mention because she lost a lot of weight now. She's looking very lean.
Yeah.
I can't say that.
You just laugh and call me a weirdo. But what was I going to say?
Back to
training, though. Yeah. I'm sorry, Jimmy. Because Master Hensel was saying back in Brazil, it was hard to find people. When we opened up here, when Hensel opened up here, classes were only available like one day a week, then 3 days a week.
Yes.
And then finally, they opened up an academy.
And the funny thing, when I came here in 1996. Today, 2017, I'm able to charge less for jiu-jitsu than I charged back then.
Because you have so many more people.
And I have more people, and I was able to give more classes and make jiu-jitsu more available to more people. So this was like a goal that I had. I said, I have to bring the price down to reach more people, and I was able to do it.
How much price? I always wanted to, are there any Gracies that don't do jiu-jitsu? Is there anybody in the family that just didn't want to do it?
That is some great. There was one of my uncles decided to do a factory of mattress, of waterbed mattress, and very successful on that too, you know.
He just didn't want to train.
Yeah, didn't like it. Was tired. My father turned more into, even though he runs the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Federation, the Rio de Janeiro Jiu-Jitsu Federation, he worked a lot in real estate, you know, the real estate selling and buying business.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so.
I'm thinking of waterbeds. They fucking suck.
I don't like them either.
Yeah. It's like a fucking 70s porno.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Fucking waterbeds. I think I lost my virginity on a waterbed.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I did. My buddy Jimmy's house.
Oh, no.
It wasn't Jimmy, though.
Oh, I hope not.
No.
You're trying to get away.
We're not going
to
say who it was, but what a good time. But it was a fucking waterbed. It's the last time I was ever on a waterbed.
Yeah, they're overrated, I think.
Yeah.
I get sick. I get nauseous when I'm on a waterbed.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like you're in a boat.
A little bit dizzy. Wow. So you wanted to train. You weren't pressured into training?
No, my whole life. We never pressured to train. Like, I believe for the fact that we learn when we're very young, you fall in love and you stick with it. And I love surfing. I compete on surfing. But it got to a point in my life that I said, that's it. Jiu-jitsu is the thing that I have to do. So, you know, I felt like an obligation to leave the jiu-jitsu life. And I did.
What year did you open your school?
The one here in the United States was 1996. But the first one was 2000.
Was there ever a time when your school was open and it was just starting and you're like, I'm not going to have enough people here to make this work? Or was there always?
Oh, many times. I was broke like many times financially because I never accept to work for somebody else. And I always set up my schools, even back in Brazil. And I used to have a school on the size of this studio here. And we always, you know, like I always to make end meet was very hard. I had to teach privates, go in people's house, you know. And everything was worth it. I was able to build what I have today.
And now you have them all over the world.
Oh, yes.
So it's nice. You just get to travel.
I have like 67, 69 schools all over the globe, yeah.
Oh, I thought you had like 8 or 9. I didn't think you had 60 something.
Yeah, we have schools everywhere.
He's got an empire, man.
That's amazing. So what does someone have to do to say, okay, I want to open up a Hensel Gracie Jiu-Jitsu school? How do they get your approval?
You have to understand, I try to keep it very close to the guys who train with us. You know, and today we have like 37 just in Mexico. Mexico alone. The last competition there was 2,500 competitors on the nationals, And most were from Henzo Gracie Academy. So that alone, it's priceless.
Great advertising, too.
Yes, yes, it is.
Do you spend a lot of time down there?
Yes, I do. And now I begun a program. I don't know if you guys seen this on the internet. It's called Galler, G-A-L-L-E-R-R. And it's I teach online, and then I teach, I put seminars online. The last one was watched by over 1 million people.
Now, let me ask you about that. I want to ask you about that, uh-huh. because you had a problem. Now, I don't know if this is, I don't know anything about this. I've seen some of the stuff that you're doing something online. I want to ask you about it. So you had some issues with another part of your family, the Torrance Gracie brothers. They were doing they still do like an online university thing.
Yes.
What is the difference between what you're doing now and that? Or I don't know if you're promoting people through this thing.
No, I don't promote people through that. Like let's say if probably someone wants to get promoted, if he's in Long Island, I'll send it to you.
Okay,
say you gotta go and train with Matt. Matt has to look at you, see how you look,
how
you feel, if you're improving, if you can really do it. It's like, so in reality, what I want is making jiu-jitsu reach people that don't have access to jiu-jitsu. So I've been teaching everything from the basics all the way up, how to run a class. So you can run out of your garage if you are in an island on the Pacific. You know, you still don't have a jiu-jitsu teacher, but you have access to knowledge. That's my goal. It's to spread jiu-jitsu the most, you know.
Oh, that's all right. So there's no online
promotions. I want to teach jiu-jitsu to the biggest number possible. So that's why all my seminars I've been putting online for free. I put it on. The last one was watched live by 1 million people.
Really?
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Would have been unbelievable. 1,000,001 if I knew about this.
Yes.
What is where how do they get onto this?
It's called Galler. It's G-A- different, like Gracie, it's gallery without the Y.
Okay.
With two L's and two R's.
All right.
When did you notice, too? Because there had to be, because long before I watched UFC, like, I knew who the Gracies
and
were.
And for you to have an idea, I got invited. The thing's getting so popular, I got invited for two TV shows in Brazil.
Oh, yeah?
They want me to move to Brazil to run two TV shows.
No, you got
to
stay here.
There's no chance I believe in this. New York.
They can send a camera crew here to film you here anyway. You could film the show here. No, you don't have to be there.
I can't leave it.
It's O Globo looking to bring them over. Is that the name of the place? Is that the name of this? O Globo?
Globo.
When did you notice all of a sudden that jiu-jitsu became this mainstream thing that everybody was aware of?
It's a beautiful lifestyle. It's difficult. Like I always say to the new people when they come, that I say, look, just learn one thing. Be careful because it's addictive. You change your whole lifestyle once you begin jiu-jitsu. You change your way of eating. You change your way of seeing friends and interacting with friends. You know, I think you become a piece of a half Brazilian once you begin. You know, you start having... You build friends for the rest of your life. You build relationships that will help you go through life much easier. You open every door. Jiu-jitsu is amazing.
Yeah, so you don't think
amazing tool.
I'm 49. I keep feeling like I'm too old.
I was just on the Masters in Las Vegas during the Mayweather fight, and I saw a guy 76 years old competing. And he's a blue belt. That means that he began 2 years ago.
So what's this guy's excuse?
Jimmy,
you know? It's really made for a guy like you. It's made for a smaller statured man. To defend himself against a larger opponent.
Because I always do get intimidated by a big guy. Like if I see a big, Matt's always fascinating to me. I'm like, you don't care that he's big? And Matt's like, no, I don't.
I'm wide.
But I always worry.
I'm wide, tell them, man. And hits like a mule.
He does, right?
Woo! I've seen him breaking jaws. In the sparring sessions.
You know what I told you? I would never take shit from any man.
Yeah.
That guy could tell me whatever. I'm not going to. I ain't a man. And you know what's great about Henzo?
Knows that every time that I say something for him, it's going to be good for him. That's why.
But you see how he's always so smiling and this and that? In a drop of a fucking hat, he can switch. Look at him. You don't know he's a goddamn psycho. He can switch. No, he can switch in a heartbeat. I fucking seen it.
But can't people sense that? Can't people sense a guy who's always happy? People kind of understand, like, there's something going on there. Like, people have to be able to sense that this is a problem.
The other day, I walk out of a bar. I just finished eating. We were shooting for Gala. It was like 1 o'clock in the morning. I walk out. As I was leaving, there was three guys that came and asked me for a photo to take a picture with me. Sure. Yeah. And then I took a picture with them. They were very nice. I ordered three beers for them and three shots, you know. And then I walk out. When I walk out, Luca is arguing with a guy. It's a strange situation. And I walk and I'm putting my jacket, closing my jacket, looking. The guy pulls one of those air horn, come straight to my ear and honk that thing full blast.
Oh. Wait, one of the guys you took a picture with or another
no,
guy?
No, oh, this right. guy outside the argue okay. with the guys that I shoot the videos with.
Yeah.
So when he honked that, I said, he must have 15 guys with him to think that he can get away with this.
Yeah.
And I look, it was just him and his girlfriend. So I said to him, my man, this is not polite. And he goes, yeah, and what are you going to do about it? I said, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do about it. You give me the horn, I'm going to play in your ear, and I'm taking this home. This is mine now. Because you can't, you're not responsible enough to walk around with this. What? I say, yeah, or I'm going to beat the crap out of you and take the horn. Anyway, this is it. He look at me, he goes, you won't do nothing about it. So I bitch slap him so hard. He was flat in the air. When he fell, his girlfriend threw a punch right at my face. And I ducked. I say, what is this, honey? And she's still trying to hit me. And the guy's taking off running on his four. He was literally running on his four like a dog. I go to him. I say, look. You're such a nice girl. Why are you walking around with a piece of garbage like that? You could make good kids. You're beautiful. And the best of all, you're angry. I like that in a woman. But you gotta get a better father for your kids. Look. So I took the horn and I took home. Now my grandkid every day plays with the horn. You know, he goes to me, whoa, like a grandpa. Ah! I said, let's go. We go in the garage and he honks the horn every day.
It's so funny. This should tell you something in the street. When you say something to a guy, you blow a horn in his ear and your response is, that's not polite. Yeah. That should be alarming to anyone in the street. That's an alarming response.
Yeah. And what I was actually measuring was, as I was saying, that's not polite. I'm looking to see who was going to be on his side.
Yeah.
And then I say he's by himself with his girlfriend. He's crazy.
Why did he do it? He was just drunk?
I don't know, man. He probably was doing that the whole night. I could see that because he did to the guys who walk right out. And the best part, after I hit him and he take off running, and the girls, the three guys that I just paid, that I took the picture and paid the drinks, jump out, guns on their hand with their badges, and they go, Hansel, don't worry, we saw everything. We're police. We're New York police officers. I say, guys, there's only one way I go to jail is if you guys arrest me. Otherwise, have a good night. They go, have a good night, and I took off.
Did he get the other guy?
No, they took off. The guy took off running on his forearm, man. He's still probably running until now.
Getting slapped has got to be really awful in public. That's embarrassing. To get slapped.
Yeah, but it's...
A good hard slap.
That's a good technique on that I learned from my father when I was 7. Until today, it works.
The good hard slap.
Oh, when it lands, you gotta see. And it sounds like a 38 caliber shot. The same noise, you know.
How good did it feel to slap that guy? It must have felt.
It feels great. And the best was Luca looking at the whole thing, and he goes to me, Hazel, why did you hit him with your left hand? Your right hand. And I said to him, I said, Luca, believe it. I thought on everything before I did it. On my left hand, I had a $16,000 watch that the chick gave me as a gift. And, when I hit him, and I'm looking to see if my watch didn't take off, you know? And the reason why I did it with the left was because his girlfriend was right behind him. So if I had him with the right, his head would bounce back on her.
You were actually thinking of the... You knew it was going to bounce his head one way.
Everything, yes.
What do you
yes.
think? Liam Neeson from the Taken's the guy who handles his shit?
I don't like
man,
Liam Neeson.
This is real shit.
Yeah.
He knows how to handle these situations.
We're gonna call Hickson, Chris?
We've been in a few.
This is exciting to call Hickson.
I love stuff like that.
That's
I wish I could
story.
Do it.
Oh, Hensel's got 1,000 of those stories.
You know what I would have done? I would have just had a horn blown in my face and walked away and been annoyed.
You would have just lost your hearing.
Yeah, I would have been like, oh, come on.
What's the name of the Hickson's thing going to? Hickson Gracie Cup. Hickson Gracie Cup.
That I don't know.
He's doing a new tournament. Do you know about his tournament?
No.
Oh, man. Well, this is exciting. Well, he's doing a new grappling tournament that he's very passionate about. But I want to ask him about his career. Listen, I've been a fan since he smacked Hugo Duarte on a beach in Rio. Where was that? Where did he smack that
I
guy?
Think he's
remember
on the phone.
That was before he moved here.
Yeah. Is Hello? This Master Hickson Gracie?
Speaking. How are you, my friend?
Hickson, how are you? This is such an honor. This is Matt Serra. I'm here with Jim Norton and your favorite cousin,
Hickson, seu malandro. Saudade, meu primo amado.
My dear cousin Hansel.
Ah, saudade, Rickson.
This is a regular
guy. Hey, Matt, what's up, champ? How are you?
Oh, man. The fact that you even know my name, let me tell you, I got Hansel Gracie, who's my idol right here, but now I got two guys that I really I look up to on the phone today in the studio. I'm almost tongue-tied. I'm so excited, Jimmy.
Well, I'll start off. When exactly was that? There was a ceremony I was watching online where you were given a red belt. How long ago was that? Just so I have a time frame.
It was about a couple of months.
Oh, it was really recent. And you really didn't know that was coming?
Yeah, not exactly. I still, not accepting in my mind. I feel like it's a move which is... I respect my brother, Horion, but... is not fit with the purpose of if I have in mind to represent some kind of new concepts for jiu-jitsu. So I feel like even though I receive, no thanks.
So now will you wear it or will you wear the belt you were wearing? I don't know how that works.
No, I'm not using it right now. I receive it the day I put it on. But I feel like jiu-jitsu now needs a guidance and unifying the vision. And to getting a belt because I deserve it, because I did something, that's a little controversial in my mind. I feel like I have to earn it by the time I should, spend in each degree. So for me, I feel like a little short for that in 5 years.
In reality, Rickson is too young for that belt. They tried to make him look old. Rickson could wear any belt he felt like it. His jiu-jitsu, what he did for the sport, it's unbelievable. What people don't understand is there's rules of time frame. They try to give me my belt, and I still have 4 years to go on this belt that I have. You know, so I can't accept before that too. And Rickson did the same. In reality, it was a beautiful ceremony, beautiful gift. You know, and Rickson can use from a white belt to the red belt that if he feels like it. Because what he did for jiu-jitsu, what he did for our history, for our family, one of the most important characters in our whole history, it's him. You know, was a big innovator, helped jiu-jitsu a lot, create unbelievable champions, and live for jiu-jitsu. It's like, you know, and to see him doing that, it's amazing. It comproves everything that I believe, and I see him as I was growing up as one of my heroes.
And what does it mean, the red belt? What is the significance of it?
Of
a red belt.
Oh, the significance, I feel like for me it doesn't change much because it's just a continuation of work. But not accepting for me has a bigger meaning because right now I feel like different than Horion, which is focused on the Gracie diet, and he's pretty much passed the torch of jiu-jitsu for his kids. I feel like now I'm motivated and give a guidance for the future of jiu-jitsu. And through the Jiu-Jitsu Global Federation, I feel like it's a need for us to redo the way for us to give degrees, you know, and establish a guidance for what needs to be done for the guy have a degree and be able to use it with pride, you know, because I feel like it's not about what you did and it's not about the time you have in your belt to earn the degree. It's more like the service you've been doing for jiu-jitsu to become a professor and to establish your position as a professor during your life. A lot of people coming from a tournament and win a black belt already with an instructor, like a red bar on the corner, and then eventually they just start to adding time to their belts without teaching, without putting themselves in the jiu-jitsu service. So it's questionable how many people has degrees who they not even know what degrees are for. So
it's so true.
In order for
it's
us so to true. Establish a new reference, a new guidance, the first important thing for me is not adding more degrees on my belt. I feel like that's not important at all. It's important for us to know what's the need for the belt in each degree and so on. So I'm pretty much forward to unified jiu-jitsu and organizing the rules for everybody to live by. You know, I think that's the best approach.
No, I was just going to ask. Like I said, I've been a fan forever, Hicks. And from your fights with Zulu to you smacking Hugo Duarte on a beach in Rio to your fights in Japan. Is there any particular match or moment that is more glorious that stands out than from all the rest?
I mean, without a doubt, my first fight with Zulu was to give me the eye openings for what it is, what really is in a MMA concept. And the end of the first round, I was scared with how tired I was and how big the guy was and how difficult has been the fight. And I pretty much in my heart, I said, I don't have what it needs to win this fight. And I come back to the corner and basically chicken out with my father, said, Dad, I cannot go back there. I'm exhausted. And my dad did not even hear what I said. Said, no, you did great. Now you're going to kick his ass. He's tired than you. And I argue with him. No, I'm really tired. I cannot make it. And then my brother Halls throw me a bucket of ice and water in my head. I just, and bang, I'm back there, you know. And like they said, I win in 3 minutes in the second round. And that was my biggest experience where my mind was like not ready and not unified with my body and my spirit to go forward in a mission. I was like scared of the outcome. And from that experience, I learned you should not let ever your mind scare you away from a mission, you know. So from that point on, I was bigger because I was united. My mindset, my spiritual guidance, my techniques, they all push me forward. And never, ever, I felt like I have to quit before I be killed, you know. So it was a great experience, was the most enlightening experience for me, which make me believe my mind has to be aligned with my spirit and my body and never quit. And that was like a big division in the way I see the world and everything. So I become stronger after that experience, and I think the most gratifying thing you can have is feel like you're unstoppable. You know, your mind, your body, and your spirit works united to the success, you know, so it's cool.
Now, that was now you fought him twice. I seen one fight where, now listen, I mean, for people that don't know, I've seen this on the Gracie in Action.
You probably
fight.
Saw the second one.
I believe I saw the second fight where Hickson maneuvered to his back beautifully.
First one was the most action fight I've ever seen in my life.
Where the hell can we see? Can we see that fight somewhere?
It's difficult. I couldn't find it. For some reason, back then, there was no VHS filming, so they filmed just a few pieces.
Master Hickson, can we find that anywhere? Do you know where that is?
Oh, man, I wish I could put my hands on the thing.
Yeah, it's difficult. Like, he threw, how many times? He threw you out of the ring, Hickson.
Two times
he tossed him over the ropes outside.
He was an athletic.
He was
freak.
An amazing. He was a freak.
What was the weight difference between you guys?
At least 15 kilos, like 35 pounds.
And yeah, I was 74 pounds. He was 235.
Wow. When I seen that fight,
it's a huge difference.
I must have been around 17 years old when I saw those Gracie in Action videos.
And we thought Hickson was huge at 173, 174 pounds.
No, because Hickson always
looked
strong.
He was always well-built, cut. But this guy was like 235 without 1 gram of fat.
Yeah, he was a big dude.
Explosive, like you couldn't believe. This guy ran the whole Brazil beating up people. He would go to a town, make a challenge. Someone would show up to fight him. He'll beat him up. He had like 100 fights of MMA.
So were people rooting for you or were they rooting for him? Or was it 50-50?
No, he was in his local place, Brasilia. It was not my town.
They were rooting for him.
And everybody rooting for the champion, you know, for the local champion, which he was very famous there. I was just a newcomer, never did a fight before, so... And they see like a little kid, they're almost crying for me.
They felt sorry for you, yeah. I said, they're crazy to bring a small kid like this to fight Zulu.
And wasn't he trying to eye gouge you in the second fight as well?
Yeah, he tried to survive from the choke. He tried to go for my eyes, but it's not exactly something which, you know, I mean.
It was just because back then was a war. It was a real fight. No, it was a bare knuckle thing, and
right.
And you would grab anything you could in order to survive. It was like a survival. You couldn't stay on the same hotel as your opponent. You would fight in the lobby if that happened, you know? So it was a completely different time. It wasn't something professional. And Hickson probably was making like $1,000, $700 for that fight.
Do you remember what you made for that fight?
was 10,000, maybe, I say... $3,000 or $4,000, something
$3,000,
like that.
$3,000, yeah. That's what you see.
And there was a weird thing, too, where the ref tried to break you and pull you out to the middle of the ring, and he snuck a punch in, and he hit you, and they said there's nothing you can do because there's not a point system.
Yes. The rules were simple. You win or it's a draw, you know? And was you could do anything, and there's not even judges to judge you outside.
What people don't understand, what people don't know now at home, probably everybody knows the name, even the casual fan, the UFC fan, they know Royce Gracie because of those early UFCs. But at that time, Hickson was the champion of the family.
By far, he was the best I've ever seen on the mat.
Now, I was wondering, Henzo, and I'm going to ask Hickson also, like, is it because Hickson looked, like you just said, he looked powerful, Hickson. He always looked powerful.
He was always strong, but not only that, he was disciplined. He trained the whole day.
He could move much better than the other.
He could dominate all of us in one training session.
My question is, why did, you know, and I don't know if this is a weird question, but why would they put Royce in instead of Hickson if Hickson's the champion of the family?
I believe because Hardy worked more with Royce than he worked with Hickson.
Hickson, could you add in on that? I don't want to make any tension with the family. I just want to know for the people at home, they need to know who Hickson Gracie is if they do not know. I'm talking about these kids.
Was a double idea of Hardy. Hardy first, he has more control over Royce. He has more like so he tried to put Royce because he was easy to manage. The second thing is he told me I was the champion. I was supposed to be on the shelf waiting for something really challenging and let Royce start and begin his career and get a chance for him to do things. And maybe if he get lost or something, if he lose, I come up to restore the situation. So he put me in a seat where it was not exactly my idea. I like to represent, but the way he put it, it was better for Royce, better for the UFC, and keep me as a last resort thing. So
in the end, he ended up being very positive. You see, in life, when things don't happen, there's a reason. Hickson ended up going to Japan and opened the whole Japanese market for martial arts. We all end up fighting there. Our whole family fought there. Pride was created, you know, and Hickson was the biggest star in Japan. And thanks to this situation, for the fact that he didn't fight in America, the whole market went to Japan thanks to Hickson.
There's a documentary, which is a beautiful documentary, which is Legacy, which I'm going to talk about that later. That's Henzo's documentary. But it's called Choke. And it's based on Hickson's experience in this tournament, the Vale Tudo, I believe the Vale Tudo Open. Am I saying that correct? 95?
Yes.
Yes, in 1995. And have you ever seen
Yes, I have.
It's such an amazing... It captures the whole time, and it holds up over time. I watched it recently. I love it. I like when Hickson, I like when you're in the water and they're asking if you're cold, and you're going, Reborn! Or some shit like that. It got me psyched. But now, when you got that call for that... How did that work, that you got involved with that Vale Tudo Open 95?
Soon Royce won the UFC and he makes like a statement where he say, oh, if you think I'm good, you should train with me and my brother Hickson, he's better than me. So the Japanese start to become curious about me through the Shoto Association, which is the Satoru Sayama gym and Shoto Association, they start to invite me to compete on the Shoto rules in Japan. And with a lot of in the negotiations, we transformed the rules to become the first MMA, like, with gloves and good punches and could use like we do in the MMA today. And then I accept to fight there for the first time in the Japan Open 94, which is a new event with new rules. And then it was an 8-man tournament. And from there, go for the 95. And then Royler fought the 96. And then on 97, they opened the first Pride, and I was, fighting the Pride. And then I fight Pride 1 and Pride 4.
But one thing that people don't know that made Hickson very popular in Japan too, a very famous fighter called Yoji Anjo came to challenge Hickson at his academy.
This is a famous story. Yes.
So he walked in with a TV crew to challenge Hickson for a real fight right there. He didn't believe Hickson could beat him. So they closed the doors and Hickson beat the crap out of him.
Now, Hickson, you weren't at the school at this time when he showed up?
No, actually, I was in home. You know, it was not the time for me to teach. And my instructor called me and said the Japanese are there. And so as I was driving my car, I was taping my hands and
breathing. I know you. You are breathing to warm up.
So I already arrived in the academy hot and ready to go. And then I saw the press. I saw the guy. And it was tricky because just before the fight, I tell my instructor to give the guy a waiver for him to sign in case he get hurt. It's like a regular waiver. Like,
welcome to America.
Yeah.
There's always a lawyer waiting to make some money.
Yeah. And then he looked the waiver. He's kind of, and he speak in Japanese with his manager. Said, that means if I don't sign, I don't have to fight. And then the guy asked me that, and I immediately felt like if I say, he has to sign, he may leave. And he come in with, I was there to fight. He chicken out. So I said, no, forget the papers. If you come in to fight, let's fight. And so we start right there, and then I could win. And it's just kind of...
Great times. Great. It doesn't happen anymore.
What kind of a fighter was he? What was his specialty?
He was like a brawler, like a pro wrestler.
He was a big pro wrestler guy.
Yeah, he's a tough guy. He's a mean guy, you know. His skills are kind of, I'm not sure where he's coming from, his skills, but he's tough, solid base, good punches. I mean, he's a tough guy, and he felt like he could kick me, but not exactly. So I
he really believed he could beat Hickson. So he flew from Japan with a whole crew of reporters to challenge Hickson in his academy.
What's kind?
The same day the Pearl Harbor attack was. It's interesting that.
Oh, yeah. He came on the same day as Pearl Harbor.
December 7th.
Oh, yeah. Shit. Really? That's actually hysterical.
Yeah.
What's really nice.
For them, it's very representative dates and events in history. So he went on that day.
How long did the fight last?
I think maybe 4 minutes, something like that.
Oh, no.
Lasted as long as he wanted it to last.
Yeah. 3.5 was Hickson beating him up.
Yeah.
Now,
I just tried on the beginning to choke him out, but I felt like if I choke him, there's nothing to prove. He'll wake up, he can lie the way he wants. So I decided not choke him, just punish him for a while. And then when I broke his nose and he was really bleeding in his face, I choke him out and put him to sleep. And then, was stated he could not lie.
Hickson, did he tap or did he go to sleep without a problem?
No, he slept, yeah.
Ah, that's the heart of a Japanese.
He went to sleep.
It's a samurai. Ah, there's no quitting. That's
now,
beautiful.
Speaking of the heart of the Japanese, is it true that he gave you a gift after that? That he was...
After, yes. He went there and gave me a samurai helmet and apologized for the lack of respect and so on. But, at this point... it's hard to trust if he's honest or he's just trying to create an image or something. But I received the gift, but I never put it in my house. You know, I just keep it. And
now, will that video ever surface? Because it's almost like the big...
That.
I mean, we know it happened. Everybody knows it happened. But we want to see. I want to see Hickson mounted on somebody beating the shit out of him.
Yeah.
I can't get enough of that.
I will eventually put with some old...
Yeah,
old...
because there was an agreement, right, Hickson? Whoever wins the fight had the rights to the video, right?
Yes, yes.
So
actually,
Hickson
has the video. Was I done by myself. If Hickson didn't film, we didn't have the video, you know? So it was like the camera was with me in the car and he filmed. So that's the only image we have because no other cameras filmed anything. And after that, he went back to Japan. He told the press... I was jumping on him with other guys, and I have to send the video to Japan to show to a press conference. No copies made.
That I didn't know.
And then we clarified my image, and what happened was like a clean fight, and my image went even better for after that.
Oh, he tried to lie and say that you jumped him.
Yes,
he was a very difficult guy, this Hoje Anjo. He ended up fighting Hayan in one of the prides. Remember that?
Is that the guy broke his arm?
No,
a different guy.
I think beat him the whole fight. Yeah. Tough guy, very tough guy and big guy. But he was always weird. He's the guy who knocked out Maeda. Remember Maeda?
Yes, I do.
Rings.
Oh, the Japanese names kind of blend together a lot of times.
Yes.
I see it a lot. Is that wrong to say? I don't know.
It's hard to remember.
Now, Hickson, we're going to ask you, but we're going to talk in a second about that Hickson Gracie Cup that that you're very passionate about, and that you're going
to
be
beautiful work Hickson is doing.
I can't wait to.
He's organizing, helping to organize jiu-jitsu. He's beginning the competitions. I've been falling closer.
I want to know all about that. But let me just ask you, Hickson, with your whole career, how did you know it was time to walk away towards the end? A lot of fighters hold on too long. They take one more fight. I mean, you never took really any abuse because your jiu-jitsu is a beautiful thing. How did you know it was time just to say, all right, I'm done?
Yeah, for me, it was like I have to follow the superior guidance of God. It's not something I decide, was put in my hands. And I, you know, first of all, I lost my son just after the Funaki fight, and which just opened the business situation for me to do the biggest fight ever in my life, will be like against Sakuraba, and everything was planned for that, and then my son departure from this life, and I have to postpone this fight, and then eventually the whole business as a whole fall down in Japan, and Sakuraba lost, and Pride gets involved with the mafia, and then the whole industry becomes smaller, and once my family and myself get out of this tragedy 2 years and a half later, I was again trying to make myself available for a fight, and the opportunity, I get a free agent, a new Japanese guy who becomes like my agent to create a new possibilities, but the situation never happened again, like a good fight prize money. The situations are not there for me for a while, and eventually I got a little injury on my hip, and I was not confident to train hard. And the guy, like almost 5 years after that, some guy from Texas tried to create a new event, and he offered me a good chunk of money, which was great in terms of business. But I was not confident to pick up a deal, which I was not 100% confident to fight. I was injured at the time. It was 8 months in advance, but I was not sure if I will get better. So I decided, man, I cannot. And then he said, okay, the money I'm going to give you in advance is unrefundable. You can keep for yourself in case you don't fight. But even though with that chance, I said, man, I feel like if I pick the money, I will fight no matter what. And to fight and to pick a fight with that injury, I feel like I'm just putting myself in harm's way because I'm not being honest with what I should represent. So the money is not going to make me get into this fight, only if I feel like I can do it, and I didn't. So, and after that experience, I said, man, I'm not going to here try to, I mean, I feel like God doesn't give it to me a next fight, so I have to live with that and start to finding myself other ways to motivate myself instead of being on the ring, competing, representing. I feel like jiu-jitsu needs me in other directions with different references, and I start to find my motivation somewhere else outside of the mat.
And can we ask you, too, that you're speaking of fighting and the way guys are fighting today, Damian Maya is probably the guy most commonly his jiu-jitsu is praised. What do you think of his fighting and his abilities?
Oh, man, he's a great representative for jiu-jitsu. I mean, he's a true champion. He loves, you know, applying jiu-jitsu. And his career, at one point, he was more like learning and curious about striking. And then he got a little more grounded on the stand-up fighting. He returned to jiu-jitsu very effectively and more like focus and taking the fight to the ground. And I really respect and admire that. And in this last fight, after the fight, we talk a little message and we talk about it. And I said, man, you should go for the plan B quicker. And I said, what is that? I said, you have to instead try to throw the guy who is like very low center of gravity with a huge skills of keeping his base, you should grab him and bring him to your guard and bring him the fight to the ground no matter what. And he said, yes, but I tried, but I couldn't. But, you know, I know what you mean. So I feel like he's a great representative. In this last fight, he should not keep the standing up or trying to go to the legs of the guy so much. He's supposed to entangle his head and bring him to the guard and from the guard try to make the job, but unfortunately, he could not do that, but I still like feel like he has the potential to become a great, always representing jiu-jitsu there.
I watched a video of you too, is with Eddie Bravo, is I think showing you something in Joe Rogan's studio, and you seem very comfortable letting somebody tell you something. Is it something that just ingrained in you that you've always remained teachable, or when someone is telling you something, are you kind of, you know, is it kind of hard for you to listen to it?
I follow the rule of the mind has to be like a parachute, has to keep open to work well, you know. So I'm not exactly there to judge, and if somebody come and show me a position, I will be respectful enough to try to understand and see what is coming from. And, you know, and immediately I come in from any situation that, and I try to evaluate in my own training and my own position is what works and what doesn't, because I feel like you have to keep your mind open and be willing to adapt your game, to grow. And I feel like he has some ideas. He likes jiu-jitsu. He loves the situation. But, you know, he has his personal view, which sometimes I disagree, but I'm not there to argue with him, so... Let him speak his heart and tell whatever he believes, and it's okay for me, no problem.
Now, Mr. Hickson, I have to ask you this question. This is going to be out of left field, okay? I'm a huge comic book nerd, and I was watching now you can understand how excited I was. I was watching The Incredible Hulk with Edward Norton, and then there's Mr. Hickson breathing and showing the Hulk how to, Bruce Banner, Jimmy, sure. He's showing him how to control his rage. Hickson, he played a huge part in that movie. Because at the end, he learned
it's
the breathing.
I was in Reykjavik in Iceland watching the movie with Gunnar Nelson, one of the guys, and then suddenly he pops in the screen.
Oh, I yelled like, "Ah, it's Hickson!" Yeah. How did that come about that you were in that Hulk, the Incredible Hulk movie?
Oh, the director needs somebody who has to show Hulk or Bruce Banner some techniques and to make him feel like in control, and the way the choreographer tried to present the strategy was very confusing for Norton, Edward Norton, and for myself. So the guys tried to create a lot of action pack, and the Edward Norton was not comfortable. So eventually I brought the idea of, let's make something more like relevant to his position as a scientist. So let's teach him how to control his emotions through breathing. And he really loved the idea, you know, about being slapped and being nervous and controlling through the breathing. I felt like, and breathing is a huge element in your, the way you make yourself in control and emotions spiritually. So I always been very passionate about breathing. So I brought this and they loved the idea. And I felt like it was very relevant to the scene, and we all happy after the results, you know, so it was good.
I loved it, man. It's amazing how he does that with his stomach that gets sucked in.
It was the most amazing thing ever. I'm a lousy breather, so I'm always fascinated when somebody can breathe well and comfortably. I'm terrible. I take little shallow bird breaths.
Makes all the difference in the world, you know. If more you learn, because it's a process of learning how to use the diaphragm, and that will create a very peaceful mind, and is much more like to recover, hyperventilate, to get comfortable, to relax, to become focused, to bring heat to your body. All the breathings can bring you some kind of element of support. So
yeah, you began that training on the 80s, I remember, with Cano in Brazil, right?
Yes,
with
Orlando Cano is my master, and he really gave me a lot. And
the other day he was mentioning that you were the best creation he ever had. You know, yes. Hickson was the best. Hickson, people don't know, he was able to outweigh his master on those exercises. They call back then the mimic animal moves and everything. Hickson was so good at it. So Cano says the first guy that was able to outdo my achievements on this, it's Hickson.
And now Chiron's training with him. I received a picture.
I saw a picture the other day, too, on the internet.
I'm so happy to see him. You know, the kid has... A lot to go and represent.
That kid is amazing. Your son is amazing. All your kids are unbelievable, Hickson. All of them.
It's animal moves you were talking about.
Yes.
I do animal noises. No, I'm sorry, Hickson. Hickson, I'm sorry for barking. Listen, could you tell us about the Hickson Gracie Cup that you're so passionate about? Could you tell us?
Oh, man. That's been like a long journey for me in terms of, you know, the JJGF visions, because in one point, I have to be motivated again because I was not competitive enough. I was not I mean, to teach all day is good to fulfill my students' expectations, but for me and my soul, I have to be motivated. And then we decided to create the JJGF, Jiu-Jitsu Global Federation, which, different than a regular federation, we focus in education, we focus in giving guidance, because I don't think we need more tournaments. I think we have already 170 tournaments a year. So the Rickson Gracie Cup, the idea is to blend with the existing promoters. But the most important is to create a new guidance for jiu-jitsu, because the way I see it is the sport jiu-jitsu today is sick, you know, needs a better guidance, because the rules of engagement are jeopardizing our culture. You know, the jiu-jitsu, the competitors today, they have so much skills, but their skills are halfway to be offense and submissions and aggressives, and halfway to stall the fight, to putting fights in a position they can control movement and time. And that takes completely the idea of our culture of moving to resolve the problem, moving to submit your opponent. And that is going to be the action, which can be translated in self-defense, can be translated in MMA, and so on. But if the way today they fight the rules and they use the rules, they entangle themselves and they stall, they get the grips to prevent from moving, those making champions, the making guys who get medals, but the whole strategies go wrong in terms of preserving our culture. So I try to bring new rules, like taking off advantages, forbidding stalling, to create a more dynamic action and bringing back to our culture our natural ability to move quickly and be able to capitalize on your opponent's mistakes, instead just organizing your positions in order to win by one advantage or 2 points, or always controlling the clock and controlling the action, which give no unpredictability to the fight, which is before was our middle name. You know, we're able to capitalize in the motion. You know, you see a fight, for example, we just saw my cousin Roger against Buchecha. I love Buchecha fighting. He's a very dynamic fighter. But he, because he's been competing so much, he's already started to find himself sometimes in positions to be comfortable. The opposite of Roger, who is not intent about making points or comfortable, he's always thinking about seeking for the opening. And even though the fight flows, Roger has one intention only, was submit. And if the opportunity rises, he will do it. Different than Buchecha, who was there to play a game of positions and waiting for opportunities, which get him confused. And I mean, was just a huge difference between effectiveness of Roger and Buchecha. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And confirming what I believe, our old school jiu-jitsu being, I mean, when it's display with the integrity, becomes much more effective than this new jiu-jitsu, which come in with stallings and berimbolos and 50-50s, which has no realistic aspects of to engage in a fight with that. So the Rickson Gracie Cup has to restore all this, and also bringing a new thing to the table, which is self-defense championship, which is for people who don't exactly like to compete, entangle themselves and get their beer busted, but that's a great thing for them to display knowledge of techniques and be able to be comfortable in executions and be able to practice a game which maybe not going to make them feel fighters, but going to increase in them the capacity for them to develop timing, develop connection, and develop, you know, emotional control and so on. So I think jiu-jitsu has to grow not only to make a better fighters, but bringing more people from the community to practice in a gentle way. So I'm very motivated to bring this idea of, you know, restore jiu-jitsu for the future.
Now, when jiu-jitsu tournaments first started in Brazil, and now it was made for, the point system was for what's the best position in a real fight. In other words, standing up, you get the fight down 2 points, you end up in the guard, okay, you're on top, but you pass the guard, you get cross-eyed, 3 points, okay? Now you get mounted, the best position for a fight, you keep it, 4 points. Back, both hooks, keep that, 4 points. So it was designed, I feel, like that same mindset with that point system, I would use that in a sense, that crossed over to MMA for me, and in fighting, that and in Abu Dhabi.
The points were based in an MMA fight.
But guys started manipulating that by getting some points and stalling. So my point, my question is, how is the with the Hicks and Gracie Cup, how is the point system, is there a point system, or how is it going to be different than that?
The point system is crucial, because in a normal fight, is escalation of control, is a superior position or not. So everything has to be analyzed to see who is the best fighter. But the point is, when you start to become like that advantage, for example, in the past, the referee see a fighter mount on the other, he has to count in his mind, 1, 2, 3, 4 seconds, he gives the point. But some crooked referees, they count faster when the guys are friendly. They count slower when they don't like the guy. So it's a lot of controversy, a lot of arguments. Oh, judge, you make a mistake. So because the mistakes, they create the advantage to make like a half point. Oh, I almost mount, so it's advantage. Oh, I almost pass the guard as an advantage. So, and then with the evolutionary process, the athletes who are not stupid, they're very smart, very well trained, they start to using advantage as something like a solid point. They know what they need to do to bring the advantage point. And from that advantage, they're already happy because they're already winning the fight. And they're using to explore the rules. So the federation, as a ruler, has to be constantly creating situations to take this comfort zone from the athlete. The athlete cannot go in the fight thinking he's going to have a position or a controlling situation who he can make him rest, diminish the risk of the fight. So that has to be immediately confronted by the referee. The referee has to ask for movement all the time, because in the movement, people are going to make mistakes, people are going to get submitted, and it's no comfortable zone, supposed not to be stalling. And that's what the federation tried to create for the rules, is to create just a pace which takes all this stalling, this control positions out of the... Because normally in 10 fights, 9 fights I cannot recognize anymore. It's just like too ugly to see. The objectivity is almost not there. They're always looking for controlling the sleeves or controlling the pants and don't move, very strong guys. So this has to end in order for us to really bring back the mechanics of fighting, the abilities of controlling and submitting, instead just hold on and diminishing the risk of the fight and also diminishing the action. So the purpose is to bring more dynamic to the fight and make them fights more aggressive, more dynamic, more appealing to the audience and to the fighters.
And before we let you go, Master Hickson, you've talked in the past about jiu-jitsu kind of being a social tool as opposed to a fighting tool. How do you see that as a social tool?
Jiu-jitsu is something which is more you practice, more you develop the self-awareness. You know, it's something each, as you get exposed to a position and you learn how to use a leverage or an angle to escape, you start to become more aware when you get tired and how you should do to breathe under pressure. So you get exposed to the worst nightmares, to tiredness, to enemies or whatever. So, and that environment, which is tough but it's friendly, you start to recognize yourself when you become too tired, when you become too anxious, too nervous, too weak. And you start to recognizing that and become more like, it's like a medicine you take in order to become more balanced, more capable to make perfect decisions, not only on the mat, but you become a stronger person. You know how to look to people in the eye and shake hand and give a hug, give love, give respect, give forgiveness. So it's social because put you more in contact with yourself, and based on the strength you develop within, you become more present in other people's lives. You become more sensitive to everything around you. So escape, based on the training, you become a better person. And if you become a better person, I mean, the reach of your advices, the reach of your touch, the reach is much bigger, you know. So I feel like everyone who learns jiu-jitsu becomes a better person. And that is what we need to implement in our sport, is be able to access the community as a whole and giving them what they need to succeed in life, you know, because we all competing not only and on the mat, but we competing, we trying to achieve objectives or winning opponents. So the idea of being strategically correct, the idea of being emotionally in control, the idea of being understanding of your angles and leverages, that gives you a perfect idea for you to conquer life in a much successful approach. So martial arts has to be something we all should have as a backbone in order to conquer life. And jiu-jitsu is a gentle way, is the technique can be offered to the weak one. The amazing aspect of jiu-jitsu, you don't have to have special qualities to practice. You can adapt jiu-jitsu to your own self, you know, and if you're a skinny guy, you're going to be like more technical and leverage. If you're stronger, you want to be using more weight distribution and concepts. So it favors everyone in order to be better. And that's what I feel like is the biggest and the most motivational mission in my life, is to try to spread this in the four corners of the world.
Jimmy, well, this is knowledge, Jimmy. Jimmy, this is knowledge.
Thank you very much. I mean, I want to properly promote too, where people can learn more about this. HicksonGracieCup.com for more details. You know, it's such an honor to talk to you, and thank you so much for spending some time with us today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, Master Hickson.
Hey, guys.
Master Hickson.
And, my dear brother, I love you, man. And
I love you too, my cousin. I love you too much, boy. And I'm a biggest great fan, you know that.
You've been doing a great job for jiu-jitsu, man, and keep doing this. And, you know, let's work together to make this the sport of the nation, you know, and bringing jiu-jitsu for everybody.
Whatever you need, my friend, I'm there. I'm coming in with a flying kick. Anything you need it, my man, I'm there.
If you're ever in New York, Master Hickson, well, we would
when
love.
When is your seminar? It's next week or this week?
Next week, this weekend in Albany, like 9 and 10.
He's doing a big seminar in Albany.
At Eddie Fivey.
He's going to make me drive all the way up there. I can't believe it.
That's
I'll
great.
Go there to give you a kiss, my uncle.
Hey, thank you.
Highlights of my trip, my brother.
Thank you so much, Hickson. Thank you.
You guys, have a good one, man.
Thank you. You too.
Brother, yeah. All the best. Bye-bye.
That was great.
What a great guy.
That was fantastic.
You can't be different, my friend, living the jiu-jitsu lifestyle. You know, this is the beauty. It's Matt knows.
I know.
Look at him.
I'm so happy. That was great. No, I mean, listen, these guys, they changed my life. When I met Henzo, I was a disaster. What has he got?
Oh, he's looking at my Instagram.
His Instagram.
Henzo multitasks.
Yeah,
Henzo,
I understand.
You know what's funny? The phone's going on. Henzo's taking a phone call like he's whispering in the corner. One time, Henzo was cornering, and they have the in the corner cam.
That was my mom.
Yeah, so
my
mom
calling. I have to answer every time. It doesn't matter where I am.
So he's cornering, and then it was one of those things. So in between rounds, they go to Henzo, like in the corner, like, what do you think of so-and-so? How's he doing when this guy's fighting? And Henzo's on the phone as he's talking to this guy. Yeah. So he goes, oh, can I ask you who you're talking to? He goes, oh, I'm talking to my mother. And he's yelling in the cage. It's fucking, he likes to multitask, Henzo.
That's
Gracie.
Unbelievable. Many times I'm watching a fight on TV and I see a mistake the guy's doing, like UFC fights. I'll call his corner man. I say, change this, do that. And they always pick the phone and I'm able to give the directions for them. You say, correct this on the next round. It's going to be better.
Sometimes I'll find, you know, sometimes I'll find that, I'll find like texts. I'm like, oh, there's a lot of texts congratulating, I think, because Chris Weidman just won. And also in the first few of them are just Henzo giving. I go, what the fuck? It's Henzo going like, man, tell him to fake the shot and you are right. I go, what the fuck?
I go, this crazy Italian guy don't pick up the phone.
Well, I mean, I'm the crazy one.
He only
one.
Checked the message later. Yeah. I'm not congratulating. I'm calling you to tell him, look, if he does this, it's going to get better.
In real time. You're telling
him in real time.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
I have to, we have to pay the bills at Audible.
Oh.
I have to do a read. I am happy that they're, have we not read for them before, Chris? Are they a new sponsor?
They're back again. I think we had them back.
I thought so. They're a leading provider of premium digital spoken audio information and entertainment on the internet. Audible content includes an unmatched selection of audiobooks and other products. Audible carries titles in business, classics, erotica, and sexuality.
What?
If you want to whack your bag a little.
Oh, yeah.
You just appeal to two of the guys here with you.
Oh, yeah.
The porn over there, the intellect over here.
fiction, history, romance.
You pervert.
perverted stuff for Matt. Anything you want. Kids, young adult categories, all of it's available.
I'm checking that out. I'm going there to check that out.
It's really, they do have everything there. And if you know, I get a little bit tired of reading, so I prefer to listen.
A lot of times what happens is I drive a lot. I drive sometimes 2-3 hours a day. So this is perfect, you know. So this way I don't need to read. I can listen to the books and things like that.
Plus, my attention span is not as good. Like, because of texting and all this stuff, I can't sit and read a book anymore. So if I'm driving, I can listen to something. Or if I'm on the treadmill, I can listen to something. Because I'm ADD, yes, too. I cannot focus on a book anymore. Audible is now offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. So all you got to do is go to audible.com/UFC. Browse the unmatched selection of audio programs, download a title free, and just start listening. It really is that easy. It's audible.com/UFC, audible.com/UFC. Get started today. Maybe you'd like to download a best-selling book from a few years ago called Happy Endings, The Tales of a Meaty-Breasted Zilch by a certain host of a UFC Unfiltered program.
I don't remember writing that. oh, that was yours?
Oh, yes.
Oh.
It was all about me getting massages. And
and breathing like Hickson when you're whacking off?
It really was. It really was. I have mastered the breathing there. You're right.
Sorry.
No, you're not wrong.
We're not done with the ad yet.
Unlike a streaming or rental service with Audible, you own the books. Using the My Smart Library feature, you can access books anytime, anywhere. Right from your smartphone.
That's brilliant.
The Audible app is amazing. It really is. It's one of the better things in technology. One of the healthier things. Because I use it for a lot of unhealthy
it's
stuff.
It's amazing how technology is changing everything. Huh?
Yeah.
Everything.
One more thing is Whisper Sync for Voice allows you to switch back and forth between reading and listening to the audiobooks across many devices, including Amazon's Kindle and Echo, without ever losing your place or missing a word. So once again, go to audible.com/UFC, and that lets them know that Matt and I sent you. And you get a free audiobook. What else are you doing? Nothing.
I'm James Andrew Miller, and I want to introduce you to a new podcast called Origins, as we relive indelible turning points that went down in cultural history and changed it, arguably, forever. We'll open Origins with a 5-episode cycle digging deep into Curb Your Enthusiasm. We'll hear from more than a dozen key players who retrace how Curb evolved from mere smash hit to a turning point in television. You can find the Origins chapter on Curb Your Enthusiasm when you search and subscribe to Origins with James Andrew Miller, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Support for UFC Unfiltered comes from our good friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They understand that home plays a big role in your life and family. Obviously, that's why they created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. And it's such an intimidating process for all of us. Look, this is really simple. Allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, with Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. It's convenient. Our trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. And in addition to getting a real mortgage approval in minutes, you can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time to make sure you're getting the right solution for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/unfiltered. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Every episode of UFC Unfiltered is now available on Spotify. I know what you're thinking. Wait, Spotify has podcasts. Stop your whinging. Your place for all things music now has the world's most popular podcasts. To stream UFC Unfiltered on Spotify, open the app, you tap browse, you look for us in the podcast section. Follow us, and all your favorites to get new episodes dropped into your library as soon as they drop. For more, just go to spotify.com/podcasts.
When are we getting Amanda Nunes on?
I don't know, 5-10 minutes.
All right. Mr. Henzo, we just asked,
who gave you your first book?
I think you. I believe you did. Wow. He did give me my first book. Hold on a second. Hold on.
What's
shit.
The name?
I know the name of it. Oh, the Walking Drum.
Yes, Louis L'Amour.
Louis, that was a great book.
Oof, you can't stop reading. It's a fight from beginning to end.
It was a great book. Yeah, it really was. That's funny.
I knew you were going to love that one.
Yeah, man. I did enjoy that. Then I read all the Game of Thrones books. So I really read 6 books instead of 5.
Yes, you did.
I forgot about the book Hansel gave me.
I bought a book when I went to Iceland for the first time for a vacation last week.
And I like that. It's a beautiful country.
Yeah. I did. Did you ever go to that Silica Hotel where it's got like the lagoon attached?
The Blue Lagoon, the water. You know, there's a place in New York that has water from there. It charges you like $100 for 1 hour.
To do what?
To be in a jacuzzi with that water, that special water.
It really
so
is
special about the water.
It's got like a heavy. What was
it's
on the
like
algae?
Silica. There's a silicone on the water. It's a very good water for you. Very healthy. And it's funny because it's a huge lagoon. And if you get closer to the source, it gets warmer. It's a natural water coming from the center of the earth. And it's unbelievable. So you spend the whole day. And if you're too hot, you move away a little bit. It gets colder. You have the restaurant. They bring the food. They do massage while you. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, the hotel was. We stayed at the hotel, and you could also have a private lagoon, which was just amazing. There's like 6 people in this. It's warm. It was really awesome. But the what was it on the ground? Like, was it an algae or something? You could actually pick it up and rub it on your face. It was really weird. Yeah.
Fucking freak.
It was great. It was one of the best things I've done in a long time. The Blue Lagoon.
You're rubbing stuff on your face. I just don't even want to.
I know.
Can we get back to fighting?
Just don't get it in my eye. It burns.
I was going to ask him, Master Henzo, because we asked Hickson about his most glorious moment. Now, you have a lot, Henzo, you have so many fights. Is there any moment that, in particular, that Pat Miletich fight? I mean, it's so, first of all, I was in Japan when you took out 2 guys in one night, and one of them was Maury Smith. You took him down and you freaking Americana'd him. I mean, there's so many glorious moments. Is there anything that really stands out?
Yes.
Talk to me.
The next one. It's a moment that I didn't leave yet. So that moment, I can't wait.
He doesn't rest on his laurels.
I hope I can still do one more fight. And I know this will be the greatest, you know, because
you
I didn't leave yet. I didn't know how it turned out to be, and I didn't know what kind of a story will come from that.
Why is it?
And by the way, the hero on that book that I gave, it's called Kambosha.
I know. I could never pronounce his name. I could never pronounce his name. What, the Walking Drum?
I thought about having a kid to name him after that.
Oh, then that kid would be tough as shit because
for sure, it's
what's
like
the name?
Being a boy named Sue. Kambosha.
Cabochard.
Yeah. Okay, that was such a great book. They should make that a movie.
Louis L'Amour is unbelievable. All these books are very entertaining.
What is it about? Now you're going to be competing in Abu Dhabi, I heard also.
Yes, I'm competing in 3 weeks from now on the 23rd this month.
Oh shit. Yeah. Who are you going versus?
I'm fighting Sanai Kikuta. Remember that guy that I fought in Pride?
You fought him for like a fucking 50 minutes.
51 minutes, yeah. Back then he outweighed me like 60 some pounds.
Chudaka.
Yes, I was able to choke him out after. And that guy, after that fight that he lost, after this 51-minute fight that we did, he went without losing for 32 fights in a row.
He's a ball. He's a fucking ball.
He became the king of pancrase. And then after, he fought Abu Dhabi, and he was the first Japanese ever to win Abu Dhabi.
Was that your first time you finished? Not the last time, for sure. You finished with your head and arm guillotine?
That was the first time I finished it. I actually had it on Akira Shoji on Pride 1 exactly 20 years ago. And I didn't have the fine tunes yet, and Akira was able to escape. Because he was shorter than me, his head popped out. So I went in the locker room on the same day, and I reveal all the move and how could I make it better. Pride 2, I was able to finish Kikuta.
What's the head and arm? The head and arm guillotine.
Kikuta on that. Well, it's a guillotine that I made it. That you because before the guillotine choke wouldn't work if the arm was inside, and I was able to fine tune that to make it very efficient. And we became specialists on that. Me, Matt, oh, Nick, Sarah. The whole Sarah family was
Ricardo,
very good at that.
Ricardo finished with
Almeida,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was beautiful. And that was ages ago. And then he also finished Pat Miletich with that,
yes,
which was huge. Because yeah. Miletich thought he had his number. He did. He definitely did. And they set up this I don't want to say legends fight because Henzo's still a young man in my eyes.
Hell yeah.
But
I don't have one gray hair still.
And Henzo fought him. He fought him in his backyard. He fought him in where is that? Where is he from?
Oh, Iowa? That was
Iowa. Yeah. He fought him in Iowa, man.
I drove there.
Get him, Pat! Get him! They're all like rednecks.
It was so funny because as I'm walking out, they start screaming, USA! USA! And then I look at Luca Tala,
yeah,
next to me, and I say, how did they find out? He goes, they find out what? I say, that I became a citizen last week. It was exactly 1 week after I became a citizen. He goes, are you kidding? I said, no, I'm serious. He goes, you are crazy.
It's funny. Henzo fought one time like that. Now, I was talking about this technique last week because Ricardo Almeida was in here last week. And we were talking about a certain back take when you're on all fours and you're trying to get your back to the floor. And what happens is it's an untraditional way of just before the guy goes to get his back to the floor, the person on top will have a seatbelt position, but bring his knee over to his hip, so he'll end up on the guy's back before he gets his back to the floor. If you could follow that, I don't know.
It's a very good position.
Oh yeah, I know. I talked about it last week because when you taught Ricardo taught me after he strangled me 5 times by kicking my back. So I'm like, how did you do that? And he goes, all right, Henzo told me, but don't tell a soul. So Henzo one time was fighting, and I saw him use this right after he started using it in the academy. This is what I loved about when Henzo would teach techniques, he'd use them in his fights. And I'm like, he's just working on that shit.
There was a funny one with that group with the Mad Ball, remember? Hoya, those big guys that used to train with us, the rock band.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I showed the move that I finished Maurice Smith with, and he goes, this will never work. This is BS. This is bullshit. I go to Japan, I finish Maurice Smith.
Yeah, man. Wait, was that with who? Biohazard? Who?
No, that was the guys that came with Biohazard. Hoya was the name of the big guy.
Yeah.
And they were the Madball. They still...
The Madball.
Madball. You remember him.
So many people coming in out of
it was
that
unbelievable. It was an unbelievable time. And there was one of the original students, you know?
You used that versus... he had a fight in Brazil versus... It was with this Brazilian guy, Eugenio Tadu. I probably killed his
perfect,
name.
Perfect.
Picture if I was like a little black guy, because he was short, stocky, little sure. black guy, and a Brazilian guy, and tough guy. And Henzo took his back like that initially. The guy had no neck, so he was hard to choke. So Henzo was all over him, but it was going a while. One point during this fight, Henzo's back's up against the cage. A guy stabbed him through the cage with
There was 200 people surrounding the cage.
Jesus.
And every time my back would touch the cage or my head touched the cage, they would kick me or they would hit me. And I remember as they hitting me, I look at them and say, my man, my mother hits harder than that. What are you talking? And as this goes on, remember the guy came and put his face on the one time that they broke the fight up, the guy stick his face inside the cage.
You hit him.
Clocked him right on the nose. Yeah.
That thing got shut down. Like
where was
somebody,
that?
The lights went out.
That was
there was a riot. I think that got banned for a while over there.
Yeah, they stopped it for a little bit.
You gonna call Amanda soon? Is that what you're writing, Chris the producer?
Yeah, I was saying. And if it's Nina Ansaroff's cell phone that we're calling. So if it's not Amanda, I was just saying.
I've been to Rio 3 times. I enjoyed it.
Oh, it's a beautiful city.
I enjoyed it.
I was just there recently. I love it. I taught a seminar there for 735 people.
Really?
It was unbelievable, yeah.
We were in, I think it was Copacabana is where we went.
Copacabana,
Yeah, Jimmy likes the heinies out there.
I did, yeah. There were some lovely young ladies.
He's an ass man.
Yeah, you really?
I am, yeah. I am. Yeah, we stayed at the Rio Othon Palace. And we were going to Help A every night. Remember Help?
I don't remember.
Help!
That was a while ago.
It closed down, though,
Now it's a museum there. They closed the place and they made a museum.
Of course?
2003, I went.
museum of what?
I don't know. Some cultural thing.
Oh, okay.
It's huge. But they took Help out of there.
What was Help?
I had a lot of good meals there. Right next to Help, there was a good place that had the good chicken.
Yeah, the whole area there, they have the chickens where they make it on the charcoal. That's the one that you had?
I think so. I don't remember.
It's unbelievable.
It was a really
nice
time.
Never tastes like that. It's amazing.
A little scary at night, though. Like, if you didn't know where you were going, you kind of had to, you know, you had to.
Every place in the world where there's too many tourists are like that.
That's right.
It's like, people say, oh, I was in Australia, in Sydney, and they tried to rob Luca. The guys with knives.
Poor Luca.
Yeah, because he's always distracted with cameras hanging. It's unbelievable.
Hello, do we have, is this Amanda?
Oh, just a moment. I thought it was 12:45, but she's signing papers.
Is this Nina?
Yes, this is Nina.
Nina, what do you got coming up? How are you? You with Matt Serra, Jim Norton, and Henzo Gracie?
I'm good.
Yeah, we'll talk to you. You're a UFC fighter. We can talk to you until she's ready.
Okay, well, I got a November 11th coming up.
Oh, yeah? Go ahead. You can share the love with, you know, we'll talk to her in a second. Who are you fighting on November 11th? Do you know that yet? Or? We're putting you on the spot, Nina.
All right. Let me put Amanda on with you because she's filling out her office work.
Nina, the whole world is here and you blow us off.
No, I didn't blow you off.
November 11th, Nina. Keep us in suspense, I suppose.
Hello.
Hello. Hi, Amanda. How are you?
Hi, Matt. Good. How are you?
Good, good. You're talking to Matt Serra and Jim Norton and Master Henzo Gracie. We're here at Unfiltered.
Awesome. Hi, guys.
Hi. So what were you filling out? You were just doing some kind of paperwork. Is this like official stuff for the fight or what were you doing?
Yeah, check everything and get its paper done.
Okay, so how does it feel to finally have this fight coming up? You are fighting Valentina Shevchenko, and that is on, it's the co-main at UFC 215. It's it's Saturday, September the 9th from Edmonton. Are you there now? I guess you are.
Yeah, I am. I am here.
How hard was it?
Sunday.
Okay, and how hard was it for you to pull out of that fight? Because that was very disappointing for a lot of us who were dying to see this fight.
Yeah, you know, like, I don't always 100%. I don't want to step in that cage, how I felt that night. And I decided with my family and my coach, you know. But I know this fight would be rescheduled, you know. I know a lot of people expect for that fight. But I know always 100%, you know. I never pulled out the fight before. And the first time it happened, I want to make sure I fight Valentina 100%. And that's why I decided no fight.
What exactly was happening? I have pretty bad sinuses, so I can empathize with that. What was going on with you?
Yeah, I have pretty bad sinuses. And every time that I travel, I always have, you know, the seat that I stop. And sometimes I be able to control, sometimes I don't. Because, you know, all the process with USADA, you have to have the right medication and everything. And sometimes I need, like, very strong medication to get in control, and sometimes I can't take it. And this time when I get in Vegas, it was pretty, pretty hot and dry. And the way it was this time, because I started feeling the day of the wake card, you know? And through my wake card, like, I already, like, I feel horrible. And then try to see if I take some medicine to see if I can, you know, at least can get better. But still, when I dehydration and not be able to get better, and I start to feel very bad pressure in my head. I not be able to stay in the light, you know, in my eyes not be able to get it, stay open. And I feel a little bit off balance too. And it was that week was pretty hard, you know.
In Vegas? It was in Las Vegas?
It was in Vegas, yeah.
Yeah, what people don't realize, Vegas is a high place. And it's dry as hell, and there is a lot of dust. I was there recently, and I felt like my sinus bothering me, and I don't have a sinus problem. A lot of times people don't realize, but you go to Vegas, you're in a high altitude. I went to run in the street, and I felt very heavy and breathless. And I've been running constantly, and in Vegas, you feel different, you know, and especially if you're having a sinus infection. One thing is for sure, Amanda is tough as hell. For her to pull out of a fight, there's a reason. There's a serious reason. That's not a joke.
Yeah, and I suffered with sinus problems my whole life, you know, since I was young. And then I grew up, started getting worse. And then when I become a champion, I started travel a lot. And then this altitude change and climbers is getting worse. And now I finally find a very good doctor to help me through that, you know. And he looked at when I come from that week, you know, when I come home from that week and I show him the CAT scan, he like, you make the right decision of fight because your sinus is pretty bad. You have to take care of that. Because if you don't take care right now, this is going to bite you the rest of your life.
Did you ever consider, would surgery help you? I've gotten one surgery, and I probably have to do it again. My sinuses suck.
He want to do right after. He want to do right the day I went there. But he told me I have to stay, like, without getting hit for 10 days. And then I was like, feel very good in training. And I talked to him, like, can you do after this fight? And then he was with me in that. Because I have to train, you know. I can't stay 10 days, too much for me. Especially this fight is very important for me. I won this fight. And then I asked him if he have any medicine, or we can, like, at least get me 100% for this fight. And then he gave me, like, a bunch of medicine. And then I work with USADA to see if everything's right. And then the medicine is working very well, you know. But for sure, after this fight, I will do the surgery. It's the best thing for me.
Is there a medicine that was kind of working for you or that typically helped? Like, I try to avoid Afrin because that will clear me up, but then it just makes it worse. Is there anything that you wanted to take but couldn't take because you knew it would be a problem with the USADA testing?
Yes, for sure. I have, like, a medicine and have a kind of asteroids. Is the one that I really, one that I really feel better. Is the one that helping me, like, to get the running, at least run, you know, the sinusite. Because my getting stuck, this is the biggest problem. Because when you get stuck, and then start all the pressure, my balance is feel weird. But as soon as I get a run, and then I start to feel better. But at that moment in the workout, I don't be able to make it. The sinusite running and then stuck. And this is always the worst thing. And then I could take the medicine, and then it was worse, you know.
Cody Garbrandt, he made me want to try this balloons in the nose, which open you up. And so I went to a sinus doctor, and I may try that. Have you considered doing that? They have that operation where you can put the balloons in your nose, and it's a much shorter healing time.
Yeah, exactly. This process I'm gonna do when I come back first. You know, do them balloon, and I have a company is with me right now. Is the one that make the machine balloon? They is gonna help me go through this, and after that, I will see the next step. But I heard about it. I did a lot of research, and I think a lot of people feel better. You know, a lot of people get 100% too, and I'm excited. You know. Because this thing bothered me for so long, but now it's getting worse. I've been working around it, been trained. Sometimes, like, this camp was way better than the last one. The last one, I have to take days off because I don't be able to breathe very well, and my head, like, killing me, and all those things. You know, you have sometimes, I think you know how hard it is sometimes to go through this.
It's terrible. How do you sleep? I use those Breathe Right strips. Can you ever not breathe when you're sleeping?
If you see my home, I have all the machines you think about it for sinusite. All the smell, the house, all the Vicks, vapor,
yep.
All those machines, like the draining, the ones draining, like go through all your nose and then come back the other side. I have all those machines. I have all those things. Actually, like, nothing work. And now finally I got the doctor and I got this company with me, being helped me. I think it's gonna be very good.
Now your opponent Valentina is she's very extremely dangerous and extremely confident. Do you think she is even more confident because you withdrew from that last fight? Do you think that adds to her confidence?
Actually, I don't think like this can give you any confidence for people, you know. Because at the end of the day, we're going to step in the cage, you know, and she know I'm going to be ready. She know I train like a lion, you know. I'm not going to let it just go, you know. And I know she train as well. We're going to be ready, you know. Both is going to be confident because I'm helper. If you help her to get confident, help me to be confident as well because making me train more, you know. Getting better and better because it's another camp, another thing you can work more time to work. And I don't think like because delay like that is making nobody like stronger, you know, stronger.
Yeah. Now you've been. Yeah, I hear you for sure. Now you've been in there with the best in the division, and you've beaten the best. Now, including Valentina, do you feel you fought her before, and you know she's been doing great since? Obviously. Now, do you feel this is your toughest fight to date coming up on Saturday?
Sunday, right?
Saturday, Enzo. Go back to Enzo's tweeting while we're doing this. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Amanda.
Sorry about that. I think Valentina is the most awesome division right now, for sure. You know? Yeah. And that's why, like, I think happy everything, you know, happy to the ladies fight, but also is a good point, you know, because we can train more and we can get ready, you know. And I really think Valentina is one of the most tough girls in this division, you know? It's going to be awesome. Awesome this fight.
Have you spoken to Dana? Dana was pretty upset, but you know he tends to be that way when he gets, you know, he tends to speak his mind publicly. Have you spoken to him and kind of cleared the air with him since then?
No, actually, when I spoke to him when I was in the hospital, I thought he understood me. I thought we have a clean conversation, but after that we don't talk. I don't think needy because. Everything already was said. Nothing's going to change. I'm not upset with him at all. I think he say the things UFC doctor told him. You know, I think he was right to say whatever he want because the doctor was the one supposed to be on time with all the information, you know. And the UFC doctor passed the information like that, you know, just not done right fall. And I think the UFC docs was a little bit, did the information too soon, you know, and he cleaned me up like fast, like, oh, okay, if you look at my face was slowly, because it was so bad, my face was slowly. And then he looked at me like, oh, you're good to fight. Like, serious? Yeah, I'm good to fight.
Right.
You didn't even know what happened with me. We didn't even have the right diagnosis to let me go like that and then fight, you know?
Amanda, were you surprised that Ioane and Jacek volunteered to fight that night? Or did you know that she would never be able to get cleared that quickly?
Yeah, I know. I know she's not going to be able to fight. Because heavy things you have to do, you have to be clean, you know, like the drug test, all those things. I don't know why she did that, but I was surprised.
I wondered if she knew she wouldn't be able to get cleared and she was just doing it to do it. Like, you know, after Dos Santos just dropped out, I mean, I offered to fight Ngannou. I mean, once in a while, you just throw your name in there. Who cares?
that was funny because Joanna knows you don't want to be able to fight. You know, I don't know why she did that. I don't know why she did that.
Well, on a positive note, you're ready now, aren't you, champ?
Exactly. I'm 100% ready to step in the cage, get this job done.
Do you have Dean Thomas working with you or no? Is he still there or did you fire his ass?
Yeah, this time he was busy and I because he's going to have all the fighters for his And then we kind of shared the coach.
Okay.
You know, and Gino was the coach. He's going to work with all those guys, going to fight in this guy. And then I share with all the fighters.
Oh, that's good.
But, Jim
vai estar lá com você? Ele vai estar lá com você então, né?
What?
Não, ele não vai estar aqui comigo. É como eu estava falando. Eu usei os coaches que já iam estar aqui. Entendeu?
Dim is not going to be there with her.
Go ahead.
Yeah, but she's using the coaches of all the other guys to be there with her.
Yeah, well, Dean's probably practicing his shitty improv, so that's okay.
he hates Dim Thumb.
Yeah, he's got his priorities all screwed up. But anyway, champ, I can't wait for this weekend.
I cannot either.
That's a great fight.
It's a great fight. Great fight. What's the main event, Amanda?
I'm very excited.
What? You guys are the co-main. What is the main event?
Demetrius.
Oh, that's right.
Demetrius.
And Ray Borg, yes.
I know. Oh, you wanted her to say it. Oh, you know, of course.
But in reality, Amanda should have been the main event on this one. This was a fight that everybody's waiting for.
Honestly, this is the fight that I want to see more, too.
Yes.
I want to see this more. I mean, look, I'm going to watch Demetrius fight Ray Borg, but this is the fight that we're all, I think, really wanting to see. So listen, good luck. You know, we're happy that you're healthy, and we knew it would get rescheduled, and now it is finally here this Saturday, the co-main 215 from Edmonton, Alberta. You're a great champion. Good luck, Amanda, okay?
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All right. Boa sorte, Amandinha.
Thank you.
That's your bronca lá.
Valeu, obrigada.
All right.
Ciao, take care.
Bye-bye.
Champ. All right. That's great.
Obrigada means thank you. Yes. I remember that. I know that and por favor.
Por favor,
I said por favor a lot and obrigado very much, a lot. But por favor, especially while we're saying over money.
You're done. You say obrigado.
Obrigado, yeah.
When you're wiping your face off.
Yeah.
Sorry, Enzo. Oh, Master Enzo. What do we have to promote? I mean, we're here a while. I could do this all day.
This was really fun. I'm so happy.
Just to let you know.
Go ahead.
She said Sunday was the fight.
Who said that?
If you guys check, Amanda said Sunday.
I think she said Sunday, but I think she said she was staying in Edmonton until Sunday. But the fight
is she came.
The fight was Sunday. Yeah.
And in fairness,
the fight is Saturday. I'm not missing this
fight. The fight's Saturday.
She got there Sunday, probably. I asked her if she was in Edmonton. Okay. I'm guessing she said I got her Sunday.
Enzo multitask. He was listening. He was listening. He was paying attention.
I do the same thing.
Texting, paying attention, writing people. He listened. Master Enzo could do whatever the hell he wants. He can take a shit on the floor if he wants. That's my instructor.
You don't text and drive, though, do you?
No, never.
Bad. I don't believe him.
Now I have Siri.
Yeah, I know.
Press the button and you speak. Sometimes it doesn't understand my accent, but it goes.
Yeah, I have problems with it, too. A lot of times, I'm
It's amazing. My kids can do it 100%. I think it's a thing of generation.
It is.
Yeah.
Technology belongs to the new generations as they come along. You know, it's like we can change.
But we're the first generation. We're the first generation to actually have all of this and still remember the old days.
Definitely. We still remember the phone.
We had a party line. There was four families on our phone. So it would call, or two families, and you'd call and you didn't know if it was for you or the downstairs.
Oh, yeah, for the downstairs.
People,
yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Very hard to talk dirty on that phone.
Oh, yes.
There was always somebody listening to.
Always somebody listening.
Your conversation. And it was a relative. That was bad. If it was the CIA, it would be okay, but not.
Yeah. we have to have Henzel win again because I feel, I mean, we spent so much time with Master Hickson, which was amazing.
Yeah.
But Henzel.
I'm going
to
be coming
back. We got so many damn
stories
yet to talk about. It's good, though. We keep people in suspense.
Yes, we do.
What are we going to promote now? Let's promote.
My tour is on sale. Kneeling Room Only, JimNorton.com. I'm going to Seattle and Portland, and then I got Dallas and Austin. And
Mr. Henzel wants to know, what does that mean, kneeling room only?
It's instead of standing room only. It's a blowjob joke.
Oh, okay.
God bless you.
Explain it, just like you're explaining the main event of the fucking thing. I knew you knew who it was.
But I did want to.
When
are
you
going to
do a show in New York? I want to go watch it, man.
November 11th, I'm at Town Hall.
That's it. I'll come. I'm coming.
You asked her that so she wouldn't feel bad about being the main, not main.
No,
event.
No. It's just a way to promote things without just going, so what's the main event?
So what's the main event? She'd be like, not me, and I'm the champ.
I didn't mean it like that, no.
I'm just being a fucking cocksucker.
Yeah, that's all right. I've been one all week in Iceland.
Oh, fuck. Oh, shit, Jimmy. Oh, you can't do that to me when I'm heavy. I might just drop, dude. HenzoGracie.com, if you're in... Oh, you know who just got in touch with me? I might as well just tell you now because you're here. Just yesterday is Kelly Ripa's husband, Mark Consuelos.
Really?
His son's 14.
Wow.
And he's asked me where to train. I go, what? He asked me for a certain point. One week after this, I'm going to... Yeah. Make sure you take
care
of that guy.
Give me my number and everything.
You know, because that kid wants to train.
It's a pleasure.
And so it's HenzoGracie.com, right?
Yeah,
I'm not missing anything. Anybody in Manhattan or around the world who wants to train or buy a gi or buy a t-shirt. Yeah. Henzo knows.
Ow!
I love it. I need a new wardrobe. Can we stop by the place after this?
Please.
I'm going to go with you now.
I loved it. I went in that one time. It was great. I liked. I should just go back.
I seen the.
I can't get my energy.
Why you didn't stay?
Because I'm always, this is, it sounds like a terrible excuse, but I want to get my sinuses fixed again so I can breathe and sleep. I don't sleep.
It bothers you. Vagina.
I'm always, I know, I'm a bit of a pussy.
Pussy.
But it really is. What? I'm just really tuckered out all the time.
You're always tuckered, man.
I am tired.
Look at the smiles on both mine. I rolled today. Hensel probably strangled 5 people this morning. It makes
I rolled an hour today.
Did you? Yeah. I rolled 50 minutes. Now I feel fucking fat.
You rolled an hour or ran an hour?
I run.
Oh, you run. Oh, you ran an hour. My running days might be over, Enzo. I'm not going to lie to you.
I know.
I could sprint like a little dwarf.
Yes, quick.
Do you run on a treadmill or outside?
Outside.
You do? Oh, you do outside. Yeah, yeah. What, do you do laps?
I do a lap in my neighborhood, but it's like 7 miles. One lap.
Oh, you're in Jersey, right?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And if anybody wants to see on UFC Fight Pass, where are they now? Season either 3 or 5. I get fucking confused. What season are you on now?
I don't know.
Chris, the producer, is not going
to
look that up now.
I can try to look quick.
I know that. Good. I'm there.
He is there. Well, so it's on the UFC Fight Pass. Yeah. It's the original shows. Where Are They Now in the UFC edition. And you got Henzo with his beautiful family. You never know. You might get an appearance by me and my little girls and my wife.
Oh, yeah.
We're in there. Yeah.
For, it was an unbelievable birthday party.
Oh, that
was
great.
50, yes.
That was so amazing. Go
it's
ahead.
Season 5.
It is season 5.
Yes.
All right.
What a great show this was.
This was so much fun.
Really
was
fun.
Nice. This was
nice
fun.
To make it too.
And of course, to the great Hicks and Gracie for calling. And that was just.
Yes, the hicksandgraciecup.com.
Yeah. Yes.
All right,
and
guys.
Amanda, thank you to Amanda, yes. And thank you to Henzo and Matt and me. Well, we're just here, so.
That's no it. Cares. What else we got to do? All right, everybody. This is goodbye.
Yep.
Thank you. Obrigado.
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 We have to end the show. Por favor.
Oh, he's going to be late on it. He's going to. Why even do it? Why? Yeah, okay. That's for you. That's for Chris, the producer. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
For 25 years, nothing has tasted better after a hard day's work than a Mike's Hard Lemonade. It's because since day one, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. We use 3 kinds of lemons, all hand-picked from family farms, then blended to perfection in cold-pressed to create the epic hard lemonade you know and love. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard. So is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium malt beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.